presently. He's a native of Norway, but not a stranger to Concordia Seminary. He was here on our campus and spoke with reference to the question of abortion, pro-life concerns about 10 years ago. And we're looking forward to traveling with him tomorrow to visit our sister seminary in Fort Wayne, where he is going to make the major presentation at our joint faculty meeting. This afternoon, in a more informal way, he'll just introduce himself a little bit to you and invite your comments and discussions. Please welcome Dr. Lenny.
Thank you. Well, I heard that there is just one thing which is compulsory in this country of freedom, namely that every presentation has to start with a joke. And that you will not be heard if you don't respect that rule. And as most of my reflections will be connected with a theme of creation, I have a kind of creation story from a Norwegian school several years back. There had been some fighting in the schoolyard, and one of the boys had hit one of the others badly, so that the one hit, let us call him John Johnson, had been brought home. And the boy who had done this, of course, he was very frightened what would happen next. And he had decided that in case the headmaster enters the class now and asks who did it, I will stand up and take the full responsibility. But this headmaster, he was a rather solemn, old-fashioned type of pedagogian, so he wanted to make this as impressive as possible. So he entered the class and he said, "Well, say, children, who created the world? And who created John Johnson?" And this frightened boy stood up and said, "Headmaster, I did, but I promise I'll never do it anymore." Well, it has some actuality in connection with a very modern type of creation theology, which is very much occupied to underscore that creation was not something which happened way back, or something which the good Lord did independent of us, but that creation is going on, and that the true meaning of creation is to share in the Creator's creativity. If you think of creation in those terms, for example, the latest creation theology I read is that of Dorothee Söller, which appeared with Fortress Press 2 months ago, to Work and to Love, a Theology of Creation. Well, this is typically the main viewpoint, that creation means creative sharing in the responsibility of the Creator. Well, of course, that is in itself a valid aspect if put in its right place. I think the failure of so much of modern theology is not that it is saying wrong things, but that it is saying secondary things as if they were the thing itself. And then the thing itself is lost. I think there is much of creation theology today in which the Creator and the Creator's work is lost to the benefit of the work of human beings. But let's go. Let me start the presentation by giving a short idea of the institute for which I'm working. I've been for 3 years now, the Institute for Ecumenical Research in Strasbourg, France. That's an institute affiliated with the Lutheran World Federation. It has been working for 20 years in the area of ecumenical studies. It was founded after the second, of course, the Second Vatican Council. And I think the fathers of the Institute, not at least the Danish Professor Skødskov, was very much impressed of what seemed to happen in the Roman Catholic Church, a change and a process of reformation starting within the Catholic Church, and therefore saw very much the need of taking up a renewed dialogue and conversation, not at least with the Catholics, but that has also developed in several other directions. The main task which I have had at the Institute is to work out a new project which has been called the Creation, an Ecumenical Challenge, ? And let me tell you a little about what this is, this study project is about. And if time allows, I would also like to share with you some more reflections on what seems to me to be needed in terms of a strengthened theology of creation today. Our project has so far been carried out in two opposite directions. We speak about a deductive and an inductive approach. The deductive, on which I have been working immediately, is the task to take up the givens of creation theology as we know it in the confessions of our churches, and also as we see it in the various theological trends today, to analyze it and to see to which extent does this divide the church, or to which extent may it open up new lanes for understanding between the churches. The other one, the inductive approach, has mainly been carried on by my American colleague. By the way, in the Institute, we are presently four research professors, one American, one German, one Alsatian, and I am there as a Scandinavian. So in a way, we represent the main provinces of world Lutheranism, roughly speaking, in geographical terms. And Professor Mark Ellingson, who was, before he came to us, he was associate professor at Luther Northwestern Seminary in St. Paul. His task has been to sit down and review church statements and church initiatives in practical areas which can be seen as immediately related to creation, and to try to analyze what kind of theology is there in this. As you know, there has never been produced so much of church statements on contemporary affairs and issues as over the last 20 years. And very often, it is not easy to see what there is of theological reflection behind, or how the church seems to think of its own identity when involving itself in this or in that way with such and such issues of the day. Many of them we would call political issues. And his task has been to try to analyze and see how much is there of theology in all this, and what kind of theology, with special reference to the question, is there an ethic based in creation, or is the ethical approach here mainly based in the second article, Christological? That is, of course, a kind of polarization which was very strong in Germany in the 1930s. Well, a good deal of Lutheran theology, which was thinking in terms of creation and orders of creation, tended to take a rather static and in many ways passive attitude over against the Nazi regime, whereas Barthianism, with its very straightforward Christological approach, the kingship of Christ ethic, took a much more active line and gave much more of immediate guidance and inspiration to the confessing church in its resistance to the Hitler regime. Well, how is it with these trends in contemporary theology? So much of ecumenical theology has been immediately based upon the Barthian approach. And it's obvious that the kind of ethical thinking which has been the dominant, especially within the World Council of Churches, has been almost entirely based on the second article of the Creed and not at all on the first, taking it also in a way for granted that a creation-based social ethics was so compromised in the 1930s that it cannot, especially the concept of the two kingdoms, which has been so dear to our Lutheran tradition. I think that's a rather short-sighted historical criticism. It is right that it's possible to misuse or to abuse the idea of creation in this way, but there has also been an abuse. For example, if you look to South Africa and to the traditional reasons behind the apartheid policy, there has been a good deal of, you could say, second article-based ethic, thinking in terms of liberation, or rather of historical, the chosen people of God, and the right of God's people over against those who are not belonging to the select people. Well, this is all very complex, and it's my colleague has not finished this part of the analysis as yet, but it seems to be rather interesting things which will come out of this. As far as the deductive approach is concerned, let me mention we have had two international consultations which have been extremely interesting. The first we had in 83, which was on creation and confession. We called it Contributions and Deficiencies of Our Confessional Traditions in the Realm of Creation. We had an Orthodox speaker. Each of these speakers, we gave a topic which had some immediate relevance to what his church had done or left undone in this special realm. So the Orthodox was asked to speak about theosis, the aim of creation. Theosis is a Greek word, as you may know. Divinization, I think, is the English translation which comes most closely. The Orthodox vision of an immediate unity of creation and salvation, of the presence of Christ in creation, and of the Christ event as the fulfillment of creation, all creation being changed to reflect the image of God through the incarnation of Christ. A Roman Catholic was asked to speak about nature and supernature, dimensions of creation. As you may know, the Catholic Church has a rather strong tradition in basing its, especially its ethical arguments, on the concept of nature. What is natural? What is God-given? Which are the structures of creation? That has sometimes become a rather static approach. And it has been very much under fire in recent years, and many modern Catholic theologians don't like to speak about nature as a normative concept in this way, especially after the troubles the Roman Catholic Church had with the encyclical Humanae Vitae in 68 on birth control, where their argumentation, where the argument from nature played such a crucial role. It's very interesting that the present Pope, who has also a very strong stand on this same issue, and the practical conclusions are the same, that his argument, his way of argument is entirely different. He does not argue out from nature, but out from a concept of humanity and of what human relationships mean, and tries to draw the same practical conclusions as was formerly drawn from the concept of nature. This was a Catholic. A Lutheran, Professor Slenska from Erlangen, was asked to speak about creation and new creation, continuity in discontinuity. And you immediately, you sense what that is about. There is a strong understanding in the Lutheran tradition that the first and the second and the third article, all the three articles of the Creed, they belong together, but that they should not be immediately mixed. Each of them has an importance in its own right. So also the nature, the creation, and God as the creator of the universe and of all humankind is a basic truth which cannot, for us as Christians, be separated from the assurance of the new creation of Christ, in Christ, the new humanity, for which the foundation is the starting point is the cross of Christ. But how do the two of them relate to each other? There has sometimes Lutheran theology has had difficulties really to keep the things together, such as it was so clearly demonstrated in a good deal of Lutheran theology in Germany in the 30s. The Reformed speaker had got the topic, well, it was the formulation was best in German, Bundesschließung als Schöpfungserschließung, creation and covenant, we call it in English. And of course that also is relates especially to the big Kirchliche Dogmatik by Talbot in Basel, where he defines creation more or less through the term of covenant. Everything starts, everything opens up through the concept of covenant. God, who is offering his covenant to Abraham, to the chosen people, and then, of course, in Jesus Christ, in the Christian Church. The approach to creation is through Christ, and exclusively through Christ. Outside Christ and outside the salvation event in Christ, there is no really lane opening up for creation. I think it was very interesting that the Reformed theologian who spoke on this theme, Professor Alastair Heron, who is Scottish, but is professor for Reformed theology in Germany, in Erlangen, showed quite clearly that this neo-Reformed approach was not that of Calvin, but that in the Reformed tradition there had been two different traditions more or less in competition, and that Calvin himself, with his strong theology of predestination, underscored so strongly the sovereignty of God, the Creator, who orders everything, that it gives quite a different dimension from that other Reformed tradition of covenant and of salvation history thinking. There was an Anglican who spoke on the incarnation and the sacraments as key to creation. You may know that in modern Anglican theology, Episcopalian theology, there has even been a tendency, I think it stems from the late Archbishop Temple of Canterbury, to speak of creation as sacramental, and that God is sacramentally present in all his work, and that in this way what happens in Christ when God assumes human flesh, and what is in a way carried on through the holy sacraments, that is in a way a logical unfoldment of creation. It is creation itself which is realized and actualized in this way. That's a line of thinking which is not extremely different from the Orthodox tradition. There's a good deal of similarity actually between modern Anglican and Orthodox theology. And then at last there was a Free Church representative, British Baptist, that got the theme, no to the world as yes to creation. I don't think he was personally quite happy with the theme, but it opened up for some very interesting historical observations, though. We had last year a second consultation where we did not approach creation by means of confessions, but by means of various theological schools, contemporary theology, in order to explore their relevance for Christian unity and understanding. But I will not go into details there. I've already given you some taste of what this is about. I am going next week out to California, where we'll have a joint consultation with the Lutheran World Ministries here in America about creation and culture. That is, we have invited spokesmen of cultures here in America other than the dominant North Atlantic type, which we most of us represent, Hispano-Americans, Indians, Black Americans, and so on. And we have asked them to question us. It may be, and I think there has been a growing uneasiness about this in Western theology in recent years, that there may be a historical, cultural imprisonment in which we stick, and that we tend to read the Bible through our particular glasses, which are historically conditioned in a way which may have proven some of its harmfulness through the whole ecological disaster which we are facing now. Our whole stewardship of God's creation seems in many ways to be so irresponsible inconsiderate, and there has been so much of a tendency to console our consciences with the biblical expression of the dominium terra. You remember from the first chapter of the Bible, the command to be the lords of, well, I don't remember how it usually sounds in English, but you all know what I'm referring to. And contemporary Old Testament theology has told us that the expression there does not at all mean that kind of mastery which we have exercised, but that it is a word and a phrase which includes much more of consideration and much more of responsibility and much more of unity with God's creation in its fullness than our traditional Western thought has really opened up for. I think that Christians, the meeting of Christians are from different cultural backgrounds, the different cultural, historical presuppositions. And maybe also in some cases listen to voices outside Christendom may serve to question our understanding of the Bible in a way which we need to hear. Remember, there is in the Old Testament even a story of a prophet's ass who stopped and talked to the prophet and put him in his place. And I think that's a story which instructs us to listen to creation in the broadest sense, whether the Creator could have something to say to us. It could bring us back to a more authentic and responsible understanding of the Word. Well, you can ask, what are you foreseeing will come out of this whole creation project? We are going to do some more things too. We have produced a particular questionnaire which will be distributed in churches in the third world, where we hope that Christians of other cultural backgrounds will express their Christian convictions to us in such a way that it could help also to strengthen this perspective. Well, I think there are three things we can hope out of such a creation study. The one thing which may be the most important for ecumenical studies, that is to throw light upon the unity and the disunity of the Christian Church, and to help us to realize more clearly what we have in common and which lanes could open up for a new understanding on the issues where we are split. Creation is not one of the issues which we traditionally consider as church dividing, and therefore consider as an ecumenical issue. We usually find the real issues in the third article, especially in ecclesiology, the understanding of the church, and in soteriology, the understanding of salvation. To some minor extent, we may find them reflecting themselves in the second article of the Creed. But I think most Christians and even most theologians would be very quick to say that, well, the first article of the Creed is uncontroversial in the sense, well, of course, especially here in America, you have the controversy on creationism, on faith and science. I would, in this context, consider that more as an issue about the authority of the Bible and an all-through issue about the character of Christian theology. That one which specifically goes into the question, what is the meaning, the actual meaning of creation faith for our Christian commitment today? On that there may be different opinions, but usually you hear also people who hear about our project, they say, well, we all agree on creation. We all believe in God the Creator. So why take that up in an ecumenical context? Well, to that I used to say, if that is so, if that's really so, if you really believe it, you would better support that kind of an activity. Because it must, I think that most of us are aware today, that theology is not just a long list of many, many concerns. And so you can say, on this one we agree, on that one we don't agree, and so on. That there is an interrelatedness, there is a wholeness. You had on the one side Manichaeans, for example. On the other side you had Pelagians. The formula of Concord has a wonderful typology where it puts up against each other these two extremes and shows how a true understanding of Christian faith must find a balance between and against both of these. On the one side, the approach which makes the world so evil and the Creator so remote or so spiritual that you can have no relationship to matter. And on the other side, a tendency to relate God and creation so closely that no salvation is needed because everything is all right, because God has made it. Well, this is a little in terms of caricatures, but it is. What happened through the process of confession building in the old church was not at least that a sound and solid understanding of creation in the meaning of the world being the Creator's work, but at the same time being in need of a re-creation, of the renewal in Christ. That was an important point. And you can say that in a way all the main Christian traditions through history stand on this same basis, and that we have in common this kind of an agreement, or to a good considerable amount of agreement on creation. But at the same time, we see in the tensions which are there between the churches that there are always issues popping up which relate to the first article of the creed as well as to the two others, and that therefore it has been a shortcoming, it has been a neglect of traditional ecumenical studies and also of dialogues, ecumenical dialogues, that so little attention has been offered to that basic aspect and dimension of creation. I think I would stop there now so that you could have a chance also to put questions of clarification, if you like, but also to give opinions and viewpoints. That's also part of this study assignment, that we are interested in getting feedback and reactions and guidance for the work. So I think I'll sit down then. And
maybe you want to just stay there for comments. Dr. Klotz, please.
Number. yourself. You mentioned that you had a concern about our failing to recognize that human beings must also be involved in God's continuing creation, in creatio continuum, and I certainly agree with that. I have another concern on sort of the other side of the issue, and that is I find so many people who don't want God himself involved in creatio continuum. I'm thinking of people who have developed the concept of a watchmaker God, a God who has withdrawn completely and who operates solely through the natural laws which he has created. And I believe that this too must receive quite a bit of attention and cause quite a bit of concern. This is the problem I see with the theistic evolution, who in effect is a postulate of that. Then, just another comment, I feel that while I would go along with this idea of including what we commonly call creatio and creatio continua, certainly in the first article, the Luther's emphasis is on creatio continua. I would still like to make a distinction, because I'm concerned that if you sort of merge the two, you develop a concept of the eternity of matter energy. And I think we have to emphasize the biblical truth that matter energy had a beginning. Now we operate with the way up to the continuum. And then the third comment, one of the things that I certainly would heartily endorse, and that is your emphasis on the biblical rule over the earth and subdue it, the idea of our ecological crisis. I think the Christian church has been the victim of a caricature. Here in the United States, much of the thinking has been conditioned by a widely read article by White, The Historical Roots of Our Ecological Crisis. And now it received a lot of publicity, not only because I think it fitted in with people's desire to find a scapegoat, and the Christian church was a nice, convenient scapegoat, but also because it was delivered as the presidential address at one of the meetings of the AAAS, which is the leading scientific society. But I certainly agree with what you pointed out. This is a character, and does not really represent the biblical teaching.
And it's also important, I think, it has been objected against it, that this kind of exploitative attitude over against nature started to develop in the area of the Industrial Revolution, which was also the area of starting secularization and de-Christianization. So if that theory had been right, there should have been a correlation between the impact of Christianity in society and this attitude, that the historical facts rather speak in the opposite direction. But it's true that the Bible has been misused for that purpose and quoted for that purpose, but that's not the same as to draw the conclusion that the Bible is the source of it, like than White did, and like Karl Armery in Germany did after him. But I think that reaction was, in a way, a response to an other kind of theological abuse, which was a so-called secular theology, which culminated in Harvey Cox's The Secular City, which really, if Cox's interpretation of Christianity had been right, all these accusations against Christianity had also been right, because he is defining creation faith as a desacralized, a de-consecration of nature. Because creation faith, according to that kind of secularization theology, means that there is such a distinction, there is such a gulf between the Creator and the created, only God, the Creator, is sacred, and everything down here on the earth is profane. And it is given to humankind so that we can use it according to our best understanding. And I think this kind of modern theology was heavily demasked, in a way, through that criticism.
Desacralization of the material of creation, or let's say making creation divine, taking matter and making it divine, or a spiritualization of creation, of created things, seems to be a polarity which is typical in theology. Either matter is evil, needs to be totally transformed, and therefore that transformation is to negate matter in order to make it spiritual. The other one is to infuse it with the presence of God, both of which seem to be rather dangerous and certainly in Buddhist tradition not appropriate, rather than to see matter as a mediation of God's activity. And I think that one of the things that's interesting is in all of our discussion of creation, we focus it in terms of matter, and very little in the sense of time. You're talking about creation and culture. Has anything, or are you doing anything in examining the concept of creation in connection with the concept of time? Seems to me that much of creation theology is carried on without reference to what is implicit in creation, that is an end of time. That is the eschaton. And without reference to the end of time, talking about creation leads you into paths that become either totally focused on transcendental theology or immanental theology.
I think it's a very important aspect which you are underlining there. Very important. And it will necessarily pop up as soon as one starts to analyze this, these problems.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lenny, and if some of you have other things that would like to visit a few minutes, I appreciate so much that you took the time to be with us. Thank you.
Thank you for